Get the scuttlebutt on your favorite team, The Fan, on the Odyssey iHeart and TuneIn apps.
The Dark Nighttime host, Keith McPherson on The Fan, WFAN. We're going to talk football now. We're going to smooth it out. No more crying about the Yanks. No proclaiming that the Mets are back. NFL. All right, which way I want to go? I think we should start with Mike Brown and Shamar Stewart. So, I was talking about Shamar Stewart. He absolutely obliterated the combine. That's where he really came on my radar. I didn't see him play all of his games at Texas A&M, but when he went to the combine, I'm like, oh, somebody's going to get a guy. And if you're familiar with the Cincinnati Bengals, their defense was terrible last year. They need some guys. They need to get Trey Hendrickson done. They need to get this guy in camp. And they're not going to get him in camp. And it's kind of weird what's going on here. So basically, he has not signed his rookie deal yet because of the language around guaranteed money for him. Now, not just any guaranteed money, not the bonus, but they are caught on. Mike Brown, the owner of the Bengals, Shamar Stewart and his agency representation, his agent, what the holdup is guaranteed money. In the case of if he were to do something illegal or get in trouble or have any type of discipline by the law outside of like an NFL suspension or I was talking about Rashee Rice last week and how unfortunate it is that these players get money and they want to race cars or drunk drive and speed. And like you would hope that they would learn from the people before them. They never learn. So let's play Mike Brown. Mike Brown, the owner of the Cincinnati Bengals, who are historically cheap. They're also in Ohio. They do have the highest paid quarterback and receiver in the league. But Mike Brown is about 90 years old. He's an old school cat. And they asked him about... They asked him pretty much about the situation at hand here. And lucky for us, we were all able to hear what Mike Brown had to say today. Let's play a little bit of it in regards to Shamar Stewart, his rookie contract with the Bengals, and him not being in camp.
Does this one feel unique?
This one is surprising. I hesitate to get into the detail, but basically it turns on whether... out years are guaranteed if he gets involved in conduct detrimental to football. Well, what does that mean? Detrimental to football in recent years has been violence to women. That's about the one that comes to mind. There are others probably. But
yo, DUI, crashing the car.
Well, if we get a player
drug possession
involved in something like that, or does something that is just unacceptable, guess what? I don't want to pay him. I really don't. If he's sitting in jail, I don't think I ought to be paying him. And so we say that if he got involved in conduct detrimental, we'd have the right to terminate the guaranteed part for the back years. He says, or his agent says, oh, no, you can terminate the guaranteed part only for the remaining part of the year in which the event occurs. Oddly, something like this has never occurred in my memory with us.
All right, we can cut it. This guy's putting me to sleep at 10 after 1. Basically, Mike Brown and Fleegs and I were just laughing about it. He's like, I'm hesitant to tell you the details, but here's all the details, like to the fine print. And when he says this has never happened before, no, it doesn't happen because, you know, these players, they get in trouble all the time. But what it is like you're trying to be able to take guaranteed money away for like the rest of the contract and not just the year or the year of the suspension or whatever. It's very fine print stuff. And it also is kind of weird because it's like, it's two things. One, are you insinuating that this guy's going to get into any trouble? Has he been in any trouble or whatever? Are you worried about that? I don't think they're worried about that. I think they're cheap. I think they're covering their tracks. I think they're down to every dollar. Like, hey, if this guy does something stupid, we don't want to have to pay him. But also the agent who gets a percentage of that is also fighting for their money where they're like, hey, if you do something stupid, we still want to get paid. So, yeah, that's not going down right now. It's a very interesting situation because it's like he's going to be the only one. And now in this NIL era, they're talking about him going back to school. They're talking about him going back to Texas A&M. Like I said, this guy is a monster. He tore up the combine. He's NFL ready. But he could just go back to Texas A&M and make a couple million and be big man on campus. And I think recently there was a picture floating around that he was back at school working out on campus. So, yeah, I guess he might be going back there. What else? Jerry Jones. How about them Cowboys? You know, I was talking about this a little bit last week because I knew where it was going. Micah Parsons was on the Undertaker's podcast. I think it's called the 6 Feet Under podcast. Cool, right? Undertaker has a podcast. Everybody's got a podcast. But I guess the Undertaker is a Cowboys fan or a Micah Parsons fan, whatever. He has Micah Parsons on. And Micah Parsons talks about how they tried to get the contract and the deal done before last season. Like, they tried to get ahead of it. Jerry Jones always kicking the can down the road because when you got as much money as Jerry Jones, these numbers don't scare you at all, these players' contracts. But what should scare you is the fact that you've been doing this for so long and it hasn't worked, and you've had all this talent, and for some reason, with all the talent you've had, you can't figure out how to stay under the cap or how to field the team with all that money that can actually get to the NFC Championship, get back to the Super Bowl, and you keep doing things that piss off your fan base and your players. Never mind how they handled Mike McCarthy's situation and landed on hiring Brian Schottenheimer, who nobody else wanted. Now that's their head coach. Jerry Jones spoke today, and I remember him doing this with Ezekiel Elliott. I remember him doing this with CeeDee Lamb just last year. He even brought up Emmitt Smith's name and Emmitt Smith's holdout from many moons ago. But he took the opportunity today to not just take a crap on Micah Parsons, but also take a crap on the quarterback of the team, Dak Prescott. Fleegs, whatever quick cuts we have from Jerry Jones, let's play those. And I'll fill in the blanks around everything else was said because I was paying attention in real time. they're an all-time joke of a franchise. And it is crazy to see as I talk about, Mike Brown being 90, Jerry Jones is 82, and you can't tell him anything. He thinks he's got it all figured out. He thinks they're doing everything by the way they should be, the letter of the law, by the book, and it's just wrong. So here's Jerry Jones talking today as the Dallas Cowboys met the media kicking off another season that they will not win the Super Bowl.
Just because we sign him doesn't mean we're going to have him. He was hurt 6 games last year. Seriously. We've signed, I remember signing a player for the highest paid at the position in the league, and he got knocked out 2/3 of the year, Dak Prescott. So there's a lot of things you can think about when you, just as the player does, when you're thinking about committing and guaranteeing money.
Bro. Yo, first off, Micah Parsons didn't miss 6 games last year. So you embellished, you lied, you stretched the truth on that. He missed 4 games and the team was dead in the water. You don't need your players playing extra games when you're not winning anything. He missed 4 games, you stretched that into 6. And then Dak Prescott, you're going to mention, oh, well, there was a player. It's not a guarantee that we're going to pay him and we're going to have him. That was your fault as well. I don't know how many times I screamed about the Dak was a 4th-round draft pick. There's no way he should ever be the highest-paid player in the NFL. They have fumbled his contract at every opportunity that they had to sign him for less. And then when he gets hurt, that's football. And the last thing I'll say about it, J.J. Watt said something about it today that Micah Parsons retweeted. You know, it's football. Guys are going to get hurt. That's why they are fighting for guaranteed money. But J.J. Watt writes, anytime you publicly take a dig at your star quarterback and your star pass rusher simultaneously right before the season begins, you just got to take it. Nothing makes guys want to fight for you more than hearing how upset you are that they got hurt while fighting for you. It's football, bro. You think these guys don't want to play? They want to play for the name on the back of their jersey, their families. They want to play for their own personal conquests and desire. And you call these guys out that, like, after you pay them, they get hurt. Today, he also took a crap on Terrence Steele and Trayvon Diggs, guys that he did try to get in front of paying because it's cheaper to pay a tackle and a backup tackle and a corner. But it's just like Jerry Jones lives in this alternate universe, and there's a reason why they can't win, why it's not working. And they've had all this talent, and they just don't ever figure it out because it's Jerry Jones' school of GMing, him and his son, Stephen Jones. Play the last Jerry Jones clip we have.
Contracts are 4 or 5 years. Okay? There's a lot of water under the bridge if you step out there and do something in the first 2 or 3. You can get hit by a car. Seriously. And so there's a lot to look at over a lot of years that could make a big difference. Have you ever heard of any clubs committing to players and then they didn't pan out after they committed to them? We have.
Bro, it's a joke. Like, how could anybody root for that team? How could anybody be a fan of this guy's talking about you could get hit by a car, paying play? Like, bro, it's a joke. Anyway. There's so much more to talk about in the NFL. As I see Yankee calls and Mets calls coming in, like I said, I'm going to talk football, but I'll get back to it. There's a couple more things. As I was talking about Cincinnati and Mike Brown, you know, this Cincinnati story comes back to New York. I don't know if you guys are watching the quarterback show on Netflix. I am. It's actually a show that my wife doesn't mind watching, so that's cool for me that I could say, hey, what do you want to watch? He's like, let's watch quarterback. What I love about watching that show, too, it's like I remember all the NFL games from the season that was. I remember the Lions, how good they were. I remember Joe Burrow and them losing and then trying to come back. So, like, I kind of know what's going to happen. I'm like, oh, these guys, they, like, queue up, like, you know, week 5, week 8, this game. I'm like, oh, this was a good game. And my wife's like, oh, you know what happened? I'm like, of course I know what happens. I'm like, Kirk Cousins about to throw 3 interceptions. No, Kirk Cousins, they got 500 yards. Oh, yo, the Bengals are going to ball this game, but. Yeah, Evan McPherson is going to miss the kick. And so now my wife is like, you know what? You always have Red Zone on. I miss before Red Zone when I used to just watch individual games. She's like, this year I think I'll know more about football if I can watch individual games. I was like, okay, then you could sit in the room and watch the game. But me, Red Zone goes on the big TV. Anyway, you know, it's a good show. And Joe Burrow is in the show. And Joe Burrow, the highest paid quarterback in the league, it just came up in some reports that Joe Burrow's jewelry has been tied back to a pawn shop in New York. So Front Office Sports put out an article today, how the federal charges for pawn shop owners fit into wider string of athlete burglaries. There's this whole thing going on. A New York City pawn shop has been linked to a string of burglaries. Blah, blah, blah. 2 men have pleaded guilty to actively participating in the sale of stolen goods. I think there's a lot going on. I know Ketel Marte just got robbed. I remember Tua talking about how his house is now armed and guarded. I mean, these players are getting robbed while they're at the games. Like, Ketel Marte got robbed Tuesday while he was playing in the All-Star game. Same thing happened with Joe Burrow. He got robbed during, I think, Mahomes' crib got hit up. I think Travis Kelce's crib got hit up. And to find out that, like, some of these pawn shops are putting guys up to this to come back to them with the jewelry. That's crazy. That's insane. 888-808-1019. I heard the Gallagher's 3000 ad. We'll get to the strip club controversy that has gone on with the NFL. I wanted to talk about it on my Saturday show, but it was too much, like, you know, during the day. I'm like, now is not the time. I'm like, when I get back on Monday, we're gonna get into that one. For now, let's go north of the border and talk to Tony in Montreal. What's up, Tony?
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I haven't talked to you for a while, and I was just thinking that the you know, the whole talk from the from spring training to like recently, it's always Yanks and Mets. But Yanks are not, I don't think they got their eye on the ball. Guzman was unbelievable tonight, and he was handling pretty much everybody in the Yanks. And people got to start taking Guerrero and his boys seriously, because they're coming. And, you know, baseball, like you said, Keith, there's injuries. There's players that don't play up to snuff. There's players that don't produce the way they're supposed to. And then, you know, the pitching has to be there all the time. And, of course, you know, the closers have to come in. And, you know, tonight I think was an indication where there are some gaps with the Yanks. And, you know, that team, Guerrero, I think that, that Guerrero really has rejuvenated that team. When he signed, Keith, when we talked about him signing rather than him leaving, I was surprised. I thought he would go to the Mets or he'd go to the Yanks. But he stayed at home, and I think he rejuvenated Springer and the whole team. And if you saw him, that bat, when he was at bat tonight, that whip on his bat and on that single, and the way he, you know, he cruised to first base when he's running down. He's always running. He's lost a ton of weight, and he came into home like, I mean, he was a truck. He looked like Pete Rose coming down the line there. And, you know, I think he's like we mentioned at the beginning of the season, you know, Judge is the guy that leads the team, and Soto in with the Mets. But, you know, Alonso's been doing great. But I think right now, you know, this guy Guerrero is leading his team, and it's going to be tough. I really believe that. I just want to mention one other thing. I wanted to ask you this. I couldn't ask you. In the All-Star game, when they had that swing off, I didn't understand that. And then I saw it. I didn't like that at all. I thought that was a phony thing. And I wanted, obviously, you know, to see Alonso get up to bat another time and maybe, you know, do it. I actually believe that he's the MVP of that game from how he played. Did you like that, Keith, the way they ended that game?
Yeah, thanks for the call, Tony. I'll take it from here. I was on live when that happened, and it was riveting. I didn't know it was coming. It's something that had existed for 4 years. We just never got to the tie in the bottom of the ninth like we did. I thought it was great. I didn't need Ohtani in it. I didn't need Cal Raleigh in it. I didn't need Judge in it. I also didn't need Pete Alonso to come up. I was on air calling it that, oh, Pete Alonso will have the opportunity to walk it off for the National League and definitely win the MVP. Never happened. Can't predict baseball. Definitely not fake baseball with a swing off. It's an exhibition game. It doesn't need to be real baseball. It was really entertaining, though. It was really compelling, though. And so many people wanted to blame Aaron Boone. My only fault with Boone is Jonathan Aranda, if that's who you're forced to use because other guys go home and aren't available, like Vladdy. Vladdy, like, where was Vladdy? As we were just speaking on him, and I'll go backwards and respond to your Vladdy comments. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought the entire Atlanta All-Star game was a success, and the ratings told the same story. And, of course, baseball fans are conditioned to complain about the game nonstop, but baseball won. And the Blue Jays won. You know what? They locked up Vladdy, and I didn't give him the credit that Tony just gave him about, like, invigorating, rejuvenizing the team. Because I just think they have so many other players now than just Vladdy. You know, I was joking before about, like, Addison Barger, because I had never heard of the guy. But how could you? Like, he wasn't around. He played a little bit last year, but, like, this is his first real, you know, season bursting on the scene. Alejandro Kirk, talk about a steal of a deal for them with what they paid him. I got to give him some credit for, you know, rejuvenating the team. They got his deal done before Vladdy's deal. And he's the best hitter on the team, or one of them. It was definitely tonight against Rodon. George Springer has turned back the clock. How old is George Springer at this point now? He's been terrorizing the Yankees for a decade, it seems. He's 35. From New Britain, Connecticut. That's why. Every time he sees the Yankees uniform, he's like, oh, yeah, I gotta bring the pain. Yankee killer activated. And guys like Bo Bichette, guys like Miles Straw, guys like Ernie Clement mixed in between. Yeah, there's something about this Toronto team. They definitely have enough pitching. They have the Yankees number right now. It sucks, but it is what it is. Vladdy was running. Yeah, Vladdy's out there looking like a whole linebacker. Speaking of linebackers, there is a move that the Giants made that is starting to turn some heads and get some recognition. As I was reading through some articles, there's an article on G-Men HQ, Giants' smartest offseason move is turning heads, and it's not the rookies. And that's what I love about football and what we're about to see in camp and what we're about to hear, because there's so many guys that get the accolades, get the social media stuff, guys that have the big names and that get talked about. Like I already mentioned Kayvon today, and I already mentioned Kayvon because, you know, he had a video wrestling. And in the video wrestling, he's talking about, yeah, you know, we faced Jaden Daniels, we faced Dak and Jalen Hurts. Like, he's like, you know, I had 5 half sacks last year. Like, I need to be able to get these guys to the ground. Okay, good. But this article is about Javon Holland. And Javon Holland, when you look at these offseason signings, I think Javon Holland landing with the Giants, I didn't understand it. One, I thought Miami would keep him. Two, like, why would he want to join the Giants? Well, if they pay you and you're coming to New York, number one market, with a, you know, hope that this team's going to be somewhat better. Javon Holland is legit. The biggest play that, you know, for anyone listening that isn't familiar with Javon Holland, the biggest play in his career is the Black Friday game where he went the distance of the field against the Dolphins. And my Giants caller just dropped off. I was queuing you up, bro. We're starting to talk Giants. But his return against the Jets with the Dolphins going the distance of the field, I forget what they called that, the Fail Mary or there was something. I don't know, with him being Holland, I think some people are trying to say like the Holland Tunnel. That play where he picks off Timmy Boyle and goes to the house, that's the play he's most known for. But he is just an all-around good defensive player that I think immediately makes an impact on the Giants. Their secondary is something to watch in training camp. How they go up against these receivers like Malik Nabers, Jalin Hyatt, Wandale Robinson, Darius Slayton, especially now that there are multiple quarterbacks that can throw the ball. You know what I'm saying? Like, Daniel Jones could throw the ball in practice. Drew Locke could probably throw the ball decent in practice. I'll give Tommy Cutlett some credit too. But like, now you got Russell Wilson, Jameis Winston, Jackson Dart. Like, if you're a Giants fan, you should go to practice. Like, this is a year to go to practice. I think in my chat, let me go back. Someone just said it. G-Man said, I'm actually going to Giants training camp next Tuesday for the first time. I can't wait. Yeah, go. Because there's some characters now. There's some players now. There's some quarterbacks now that can throw the ball around where practice should be good. So much of practice depends on the reps. And it starts with the right quarterback that can get in the huddle or no huddle, call the play, and execute the play. And you need good reps. So that's coming up, man. I will keep throwing football stuff out there. I'm going to take another call here before we break. And then when we come back, we got to talk about this strip club story with the guy from the NFL PA. Nick is in St. Augustine, Florida on the Fan. What you thinking about, Nick?
Hey, what's up, Pete?
What's up?
Listen, I'm listening to these Met calls. I'm a Met fan. Been a Met fan. I'm 44 years old. Been a Met fan my whole life. Barely got to see a World Series, right? Too young. Yeah. I'm hearing them saying the Mets are amazing. They're great. And I don't know what they're looking at. I seen a team last year in the Mets that I knew was going to come back every game and win. Everybody up and down the lineup would get hits, except for Pete, ironically. Alonso was the only one that didn't get big hits last year. This year, I'm looking at a team that plays sloppy. Last year, they played crisp. They were crisp on the bases, crisp in the defense. This year, I see nothing but sloppiness on the bases, sloppiness in the defense. Today, we won, yeah, but how many errors did it take for us to win? Alvarez hit one to the wall, but it still probably should have been caught. I'm seeing a team that can hit. I'm seeing a team that looks like it's got no heart. I'm seeing a team that's got no bullpen. Yes, that can maybe get fixed at the deadline, but there's not enough moves to make in the deadline. I agree with you 100%. Both New York teams do not look like World Series teams, and it doesn't look like there's enough to be done. I don't know. What do you think the Mets could do? What do you think is the biggest thing? I think the Mets need bats more than anything else and bullpen help. What do you think they could do? I mean, I'm telling you, This team is embarrassing this year. I hate watching them. I don't even like the team this year. That's how bad it is.
I guess Nick's glass is half empty. I disagree with a lot of that. I don't think they need any bats. I think they've. I was saying. I think they have three postseason proven bats that you get those guys to October, and they're gonna win. Like they're gonna find ways to come through. There's gonna be some matchups that they have where it's in their favor. Get the pitching sorted. Start with the bullpen. Your rotation is gonna shake out better because as Senga keeps going, as Manaea keeps going, you know you should be all right there. Get the bullpen together. Figure out if you want Clay Holmes to continue being a starter or if you want him in the bullpen. David Peterson will be all right. Frankie Montas, we'll see if he'll be all right. You're starting to get back to the, you know, starting five that you envisioned. You maybe get one more starter, but I think they need some high leverage relievers. You have Edwin Diaz. It's another guy that, like, you should feel good about when you get to the postseason once he gets the ball in his hands. If you can get, you know, good showings out of Reed Garrett and Brazoban, and then, you know, Brooks Raley is back, you'll feel better about it. But no, I don't, even with the sloppiness, Lindor had the error tonight, but he made up for it. Like, I gave him credit for hustling. I gave him credit for that, you know, that force out driving in a run where he was hustling. He's just trying to get off the schneid. I don't think Met fans were calling in tonight, like, you know, saying it was all great, but it's good to win, especially winning back-to-back, especially having W3 on the line and a chance to win the series with Frankie Montas on the mound tonight. And I think when you look at where they are, just a half game back behind Philadelphia, you can't be so worried about, like, I just think that they have enough talent on their side. They have the deadline on their side. They have just, you know, a half game deficit to be back in first. There's nothing to be really too sad about, especially with Francisco Alvarez returning tonight as well. 888-808-1019. Still got some Yankee calls. We'll get to you guys. How about this? We'll do a tell me something cool when we come back, and then that'll cue us up into some of the Yankee calls. But I'm still going to hit you with some NFL talk, and we'll close talking about, you know, the NFLPA scandal. With Lloyd Howell Jr. in the strip club. Keith McPherson on the Fan. I'll be right back.
New York sports is more than a game. It's a lifestyle. WFAN is the only place where Yankees, Mets, Giants, and Jets fans come together and sound off. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always streaming on the Odyssey, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn apps.
Something cool.
Hey, John. Good to hear from you again. I've got a couple cool things to tell you. Which way should we go? Let's go with the Mets. I mean, I already told the Met fan that Café con Lindor, that debuts today at 12 p.m. on YouTube. It showed a video of Lindor making some coffee. But I would assume it's more than him making coffee. I don't think he's actually launching his coffee shop. When I originally saw it, I tweeted at Tommy, because Tommy always is saying something is brewing in Queens. I'm like, yo, get us some coffee for the station. And then I looked at it. I was like, oh, it says episode 1, July 22nd at 12 p.m. So at noon today, you will learn about what Cafe Con Lindor is. And maybe that'll give him the bump that he needs to homer again, to double again. Like, they've been flashing the numbers. The Mets go as Lindor goes. When Lindor does well, the Mets do well. Also, kind of staying in that vein for the Met fan, Citi Field will be hosting the Dominican Republic and Puerto Rican All-Star teams in the next chapter of this legendary rivalry. Yep. November 15th, you will see DR versus PR, the showdown in NYC at Citi Field. That's probably going to be Liddy. That'll probably be like, I forget who they had come to Yankee Stadium. It was too cold for me. Yeah, I forget what the name of the teams were. It was from the Dominican Winter League. It was, okay. It was from
Tigres del Licey and Aguilas Cibaneas. I don't know. That was last November. Now they're coming to Citi Field. Okay, something cool for the Yankee fan. Rob Manfred was on Part of My Take today. And they asked Rob Manfred about his fandom. And he said he grew up a Yankee fan and he still watches a lot of the Yankees games. And so, of course, everybody ran with that. Yo, fix the World Series for us then. Yo, you're the commissioner. Hook it up for us. Yeah, easier said than done. Okay, back to the phones. We'll take these Yankee calls, and then we got to talk about this story. I've been waiting to talk about this story. Phil's in shit.
Hi, Pete.
Yes.
I think tonight I watched the Met game, but more important for the Yankees, looked like they were showcasing Regnifo. He batted eighth. He had a lot of energy, made all the plays in the field. In fact, he robbed Lindor once, but twice he made spectacular plays in the field, and he got three hits. So maybe Mr. Brian Cashman ought to look up and see what he needs, and they don't need another power hitter, that's for sure. This guy Regnifo does the trick. Have a good evening.
Yeah, I don't think they were showcasing Regnifo. Thanks for the call, Phil. He batted ninth. He plays second base, and he's been playing second base. And I think the Yankees are good on Regnifo. I don't think he's more of a target than Ryan McMahon, Key Brian Hayes, Willie Castro, Eugenio Suarez. That's who I think is on the docket. I don't think they were showcasing him. They got some players though. You know, they're all right. They hover around 500. Joe Odell has been going crazy. Joe Odell, not Odell. Odell's been trying to get the Giants to pay attention to him. Odell Beckham Jr. has been working out with his Giants gear and Giants helmet, reminiscing on the days. You Giants fans want a second tour of Odell Beckham Jr.? I don't think you really want a second tour of Odell Beckham Jr. For what? For what? I think Malik Nabers would want that, though. LSU homies, you know, you guys heard the story about him reaching out to Odell. I just don't think it would. What is it going to cost for Odell? I don't think he's going to add much. I think he's cooked. I think he's done. Anyway, I saw this earlier today from Yankee source. The Yankees had plenty of offense in July. Pitching has been another story. And it's from FanGraphs. And I'm like, all right, let me see. You know, it was basically in support of Cody Bellinger being in the lineup who wasn't. But it showed Cody Bellinger's average for July. He was hitting .328 in the month of July. 163 weighted runs created plus. His on-base percentage, slugging, let's see. Slugging was .609. Let me see what other numbers jumped out at me. Oh, Trent Grisham and Paul Goldschmidt were back up in July. Trent Grisham was batting .323 in July. Paul Goldschmidt, .333. Anthony Volpe, .153. Oswald Peraza, .103. And of course, they damned us with their gloves last night. Brian's in Pennington, New Jersey on the Fan. Brian, tell us something cool.
Hey, Keith, how are you?
I'm
this
good.
Is the first time I got a chance to call in. You know, I listen to you every night. You know, I work nights. Great show, man.
Thank you.
I think you and C-Mac are, you know, two guys on the whole station that are Yankee fans? You know, yeah, I listen to a lot of Mets fans at nighttime anyway.
Yeah, I think it's BT, Morash, but what it is like we are two guys that have our own shows, so we can make it about the Yankees the whole time. We can always come back to it. I think it works out well the way that it's stacked at night, and I think Big Mac is great. He's coming up next.
That's awesome. But my 2 points I want to make is, it's probably going to be an anomaly, but I'm not a big Judge fan, to be totally honest with you. And it has nothing to do with the clutch in the playoffs. It has a lot to do with, I just think the leadership, you know, I think, you know, for the game of baseball in its entirety. I mean, how don't you participate in the swing off at least? If you don't want to do the home run derby, I get it. But you don't even do the swing off. You know, I mean, for baseball,
I don't know if he was there. I don't know if he was even physically there. They didn't show him on camera. I think he was gone. I think he was dismissed.
Well, I think they all know it was going to be a part of the game. I don't know about you, but I didn't even know it was going to be a part of the game.
No, I didn't know. But, I guess I knew 4 years ago when it came up in the news, but I was in here live. Like, wait, what are they about to do? Oh, a swing off, and they flash it. I was like, this is sick. Cool, let's see how it plays out. But I didn't have the thought, like, Judge and Ohtani would be in it. I don't know. I've been to these All-Star games, and yeah, they let these guys get out of Dodge. But that was a good point, Brian. Let me take it from here. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the call. There's a couple things. One, you know, you talk about Judge. Big Murph in the chat said, man, even our captain, as much as I love him, he's laid back and shows zero emotion or fire. And then he went on to say, we have no one to spit fire. No Gardy, no CeCe. Who tried to fire them? Oh, I think he said Rodon, but it's a typo. Rodon tried to fire them up today, and it did not. And they showed that Rodon coming into the dugout. Toronto was always a place of frustration. That made me think of last year with wasn't it Toronto where Stroman was pissed off because Glaber didn't make the throw, and he tried to show him up in a way and said something. Whatever. Either way. I think Judge's laid-back demeanor, him being larger than everybody and him not being much of a, like somebody does have to get pissed off. And I had this conversation. Shout out to Joni. I know Joni's not listening. And I got to pull up on Joni next homestand. I think Joni's season tickets are in 422. Great seats up there. Underrated. But you know what? Joni and I were sitting next to each other during the Savages in the Box rant. And that just came up on, I don't know how many years, 6 years? And, you know, we reminisced on that time, and I was like, you know what? I forgot, like, Gardy was, like, one of the last of the Mohicans. He was, like, the last of the old guard. Like, so much so that, like, Booney almost had to answer to him. You know what I'm saying? Like, Booney isn't that much older than Brett Gardner. And Brett Gardner and Booney played with some of the same guys. Where, like, you remember Gardy banging the bat on the dugout, and you remember how much Boone was more like fired up and getting tossed out almost because it was like, yo, you have to do that because you might have to fight Brett Gardner in the clubhouse, bro. I just heard Judge at the All-Star game, and when they asked about his favorite teammates, he listed CeCe, he listed Brett Gardner, because you know what, those guys were champions and they showed him the Yankee way, but personality wise they couldn't be any more different than Judge. Who's the guy showing the way? I guess Stanton is like leading by example, and I'm glad that Stanton is back and contributing, and Stanton does a lot of talking, like, oh, we don't, you know, we heard him say, we don't get swept at home. Yes, you do. I've been there. I've seen it. But I like the idea. Oh, I don't want to see you guys walking around with those AL pennant rings on. Okay. Yes, sir, Mr. Big G, sir. But, like, he showed up today in a game against the Toronto Blue Jays that you had to have. Stanton was ready. Nobody else was ready. Who is the rah-rah guy in the clubhouse for the Yankees? You can go around the diamond. It's not Paul Goldschmidt. He's quiet as kept. He's barely, like, he just got here. Jazz might have something to say. But, like, Jazz is, I don't know. It's definitely not Volpe. It can't be Peraza. It's none of the catchers. Belly is not like that. I mean, it's got to be who. Nobody yells. Nobody gets pissed off. It's not Trent Grisham. He's smooth operator. He hit a grand slam. He didn't show any emotion. Grand slam to come back and win it. Who is that in there? They need somebody in the clubhouse. But as we every year we get further from 2009, less of that, you know, past Yankees pedigree and the stuff that was passed down. Less and less of that lives in that clubhouse, and more of this participation trophy Yankees era exists. More of this Aaron Boone coddling players. Everything's going to be all right. Get them next time. No, no, no. Your metrics are lying to you. You know, speaking of CeCe, CeCe's coming up on that Hall of Fame. Oh, happy birthday to CeCe Sabathia. Missed it by a day. Should have said it before the clock turned 12. But yeah, I thought about going up to Cooperstown. It's too far. Once you have a kid, everything becomes like, it's too far. Too far to take the kid, too far to leave the kid, you know, too far for me to go and leave the kid with my wife. I'm not going, but I'll be watching. Super excited to see CeCe go to the Hall of Fame and hopefully get honored in Yankee Stadium with his own day, maybe get his number retired. Okay, now the moment you've all been waiting for. You know, I had to wait till the kids went to bed. If you know me, you know I grew up in a strip club. First time I ever entered the Gentleman's Club, I was 16. And then I was DJing in the strip club by the time I was 19. And I did that until I was probably like 25 or 26. Never fell for a stripper. Never dated one. Rendezvoused with a few. Drove some of the chicks home. But basically, like, I was a DJ in the club. So I had to, like, develop relationships with them where, like, I knew what music they liked. I knew what time of the night to play certain songs. And the way that they paid you at the strip club doesn't actually pay you. The girls pay you out. I've told this story on The Fan years ago. And usually the Gallagher's ad is what prompts it. The minimum the girls can pay you is 20 per shift. If you pay me 20, you're a bum. You know, I'm not even going to go into detail on that. But what I'm saying is, like, man, those nights would start at 7 p.m. and not end till 5, sometimes 6 a.m. because it depends. If I end up going somewhere, taking some of the girls home, getting something to eat, whatever. A lot of them don't have cars. A lot of them live in some sketchy areas. A lot of them were scared to leave the club because it felt like guys were waiting on them. Hey, can you give me a ride home? Can you walk me in the car? Anyway, I learned a lot about, you know, being in the nightlife, being in the club. And before I was married and before I had a kid, I felt like that gave me such an advantage in other strip clubs that I would go to across the country or anywhere. Well, speaking of such, this guy, Lloyd Howe Jr., yeah, he went to two strip clubs. He had a $738 car service bill because he had one of the car service guys wait outside the club for him. Wildin'. He went from the Fort Lauderdale Airport at 10:26 to Miami Gardens, which, like, there's so many strip clubs around there, bro. Don't go to the main ones. Like, you could have them. You could have the guy wait at a. Anyway, this guy charged so much money that he got flagged. And it's hilarious when you actually read through it, right? He went to Magic City after he went to, you know, Tootsie's. He went to Magic City in February, and he charged $2,426 of a bill, ranging from ATM withdrawals, where he took out anywhere from $200 to $525. Documents show he used two VIP rooms, so Buddy was getting it in. And sometimes when you're in them VIP rooms, the price goes up. You got to go to the ATM. Even if you came in there with cash, you got no choice but to use the NFL company card on the ATM. And if you're going to take out $200, you might as well take out $500 because they're docking you $20 per transaction. This article is one of my favorite stories of the year. Buddy tried to cover it up and say that the purpose of the strip club outing was player engagement to support and grow our union. Yeah, all right. I can't knock it, though, man. He had to resign. He stepped down immediately. Hands up. You got me. You got me. Hopefully it was worth it. Hopefully Peaches or Destiny or Diamond or one of them got you right, man. On the NFLPA company card. The audacity. Don't you make enough money? Anyway, C-Mac is coming up next. Thanks for listening to my show. Keith McPherson on The Fan. I'm out. Good night. Sports Radio 1.